Hello and welcome to the Scottish Song Guide with the Sorries. I'm Marty.
And I'm Douglas.
And today we'll be looking into the story and sources for the song Jock O'Hazeldine.
Why weep you by the tide, lady? Why weep you by the tide? I'll wed ye to my youngest son, and ye shall be his bride.
Now, there's a note by Lockhart in 1841 which states that the first stanza of this poem is ancient, and the others were worked up by Scott for Mr. Campbell's Albine's Anthology of 1816.
I think rather than abbreviating titles, Marty, I should give you the full title for Albine's Anthology.
Stickler for formality.
Which is Albine's Anthology, or A Select Collection of the Melodies and Vocal Poetry Peculiar to Scotland and the Isles, hitherto unpublished, collected and arranged by Alexander Campbell, author of The History of Poetry in Scotland, A Journey Through the Different Parts of Scotland, etc., etc., the modern Scottish and English verses adapted to the Highland, Hebridean and Lowland melodies, written by Walter Scott, Esquire, and other living poets of the first eminence, Volume 1. And I love the fact that at some point in that he put etc, etc, but didn't put that after like the third word or something.
Well, at least he had the self-awareness to give you an etc in the middle.
Jock O'Hazeldine, Marty, it's a song that I really love, but I don't actually have much to do with it because you basically just play it. But it's a song which I had heard, but I had never really been particularly keen on until, and brace yourself because this is going to be a compliment and you know you don't get many of them from me, I wasn't that struck on it until I heard your version, actually, which I really love. I thought it was a great version. I really like the way you sing it.
Well, I've got my chair with arms today so that when I fell over, it wasn't audible for everybody. Yeah.
I should say that I subsequently heard a version. There was an Amazon series set during the American Revolution called Turn, and it featured a version of it by Gary Lightbody and Johnny McDade, and it is a truly superb version. So, I mean, you're second place to that.
Then you realised how I should have sung it.
Yeah.
Which I think actually is absolutely fair. It is an absolutely superb version.
It is a great version.
It's sort of uncomplicated when it needs to be uncomplicated, and kind of fancy and well judged when it needs to be. It's just brilliant.
Yeah,
love it.
Definitely. So you obviously have you're the one that sings the song. So what's the story of the song?
Well, the basic story is a kind of an old one. It's almost a wee sort of trope of folk music, which is a girl trying to be persuaded to marry. In this particular setup, there's an older man who sees this girl crying her eyes out and says, "Why are you crying?" And she says, "I'm crying for Jock O'Hazeldine." And he basically says, "But you're so lovely, why don't you come and marry my son instead?" And in Scott's version, she says, "No, I can't do that because I love Jock O'Hazeldine." And he says, "Oh, come on, I'll give you all this money. You'll be dressed in the finest clothes. You'll be the queen of us all. It's going to be fantastic. You're going to love it." And she says, "No." However, he tries to prevail on her, and eventually the wedding is all set up with his son, young Frank, and she doesn't show up because she's headed over the border with Jock O'Hazeldine.
That's the thing that's worth saying. It's a cross-border thing, because Hazeldine is supposedly Hazeldine, which is in Roxburghshire. But, it's a cross-border thing because I think Frank is young Frank of Langleydale.
Yeah, that's right. So it's down in the sort of north of England.
Yeah.
So in Scott's version, it's, as you say, a cross-border thing. Ronnie Renton's actually great on this. He actually also pointed out that it's a setup that Scott had used before in Young Lochinvar, where it's all about the handsome young lover, and, you know, he seizes the girl who's really in love with him. And, you know, the good thing about that, in both cases, the girl actually ends up with the guy that she loves, not the one that everyone thinks she should marry. And the song itself, I think, is just lovely.
Yeah.
Scott's version of it is lovely, and the original verse that he took it from is a beautiful verse,
yeah.
I think.
And as you say, the people listening that are familiar with a lot of folk songs, not just Scottish folk songs, but folk songs from all over, will be really familiar with that idea of, you know, trying to woo the young lady and telling her what she'll be given if she, or giving reasons right. for her to marry. We talked about it a bit with Bonnie Lassifavio yeah. the other week, actually, when we were talking about the captain trying to woo the young woman and, oh, come with me, you know, you'll have this and that in the next.
Yeah, and it's so well known that actually Hogg can kind of turn it on his head when he writes Kirk of Burnie Boozle, where he says, oh, but get you all these things, but the things that he mentions aren't very nice.
Yeah.
But that's probably for another podcast.
Ye shall be his bride, lady, sae comely to be seen. But aye she loot, the tears doon fall, for Joko Hazeldine.
So that's the basic sort of story of the song as Scott writes it. But it possibly may be from an older version, and there's older traces of other ballads. So I wonder if you'd like, before we get onto that, to talk a little bit about the tune.
Yeah, well, in Albin's anthology, it's given as an old air. So I think Scott presumed it to be an old border melody, or said it was an old border melody. And when it appears in there, the tune is in 2/4 time, so why weep ye by the tide, lady, as opposed to 3/4 waltz time, which you play it in.
Yeah.
But as with so many others, the tune predates its publication there as a complete song in another form. So there are elements of the tune to Jock of Hazeldine in an old song called In January Last, which actually appeared in the Tea Table Miscellany by Alan Ramsay, who we've been mentioning a lot this series of the podcast.
We really have.
Yeah, but actually it predates the Tea Table Miscellany. In January Last, appeared in the Blakey manuscript in, I think, 1692. That's kind of dated to, and was in a play by Tom Durfee in 1676. So it was down in England then, and was published by John Playford as well. Now, it was published as In January Last by Playford in 1679, but was published in his Apollo's Banquet a bit later, kind of 9 years later, eight or 9 years later, as a Scotch tune. But both of those have, the start of both of them are really close to Jock of Hazeldine. So it's more than just, oh, that bar there. We talk about that a bit, I think, of like,
yeah,
oh,
yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's like, oh, it has its roots in this tune. And you actually go to the tune, to the original, and you think, oh, well, there's a bar here and maybe a bar there. But those melodies, as published by Playford, are definitely closer than that.
Well, that being the case, I'm glad that Playford had the decency to call it a Scotch tune.
Well, he did.
You
there,
had me worried
yeah.
there for a minute.
Yeah, I mean, it also appears, in fact, in the Blakey manuscript, it's there as Lady Binny's Lilt. And there is a very similar tune published as Lashley's March in 1652. So, you know, it's definitely been kicking around in various forms for, you know, a good 150 years before Scott puts his words to it in Albin's anthology.
Yeah. It's a very, very old tune then.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let these willful tears be done, and dry her cheeks sae pale. Young Frank is chief o' wedding, and Lord o' Langleydale, his step is first and holds a peace, his sword in battle keen. But aye she loot, the tears doon fall, for Jock o' Hazeldine.
We've talked about Scott's version a little bit, and he had the first old stanza and then composed the other three So it's a four verse ballad. But there are other versions of it which in some cases date from possibly 100 years before Scott's writing his version.
Yeah, well, Charles Sharp sent Scott a fragment which is supposedly copied down. Now, this seems to have been from the Elizabeth Cochrane manuscript. It was bought supposedly in the Westport, in a shop in the Rope in the Westport in Edinburgh, which is John of Hasselgreen. And he copied it down a fragment. And there's a bit of chat that at the time, Sharp had said this is 100 years old. So that puts it kind of back 1710, 1720. I've seen one person online said, well, it couldn't be much older than 1730, and then didn't say why.
Yeah, but even still, we're anyway. Still talking, you know, 90-odd years before.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, that is it's a slightly different version of it. It's a much longer song.
Yeah.
And, you know, Scott didn't see all of it, but we don't know whether Scott... we don't know whether Scott actually saw this manuscript before he wrote his, or if he was just working from the fragment and then working that up, the single verse. So the fragment that Scott we know had was, "Why weep you by the tide, lady? Why weep you by the tide? I'll wed you to my youngest son, and you shall be his bride. You shall be his bride, lady, sae comely to be seen. But aye she let the tears doon far for Jock o' Hazeldine." And we know that Scott was working from that because he wrote a letter to a Miss Clefane of Mull, where he was, I think it was a letter of introduction actually for Alexander Campbell, who was travelling around collecting for his Albans anthology at the time. Hmm. And he said, "Some of Campbell's tunes are really very prettily arranged, and I am beginning to give him words for them. One tune I am quite enjoué about," which I think is infatuated by. So one tune I'm quite infatuated by. "It's decidedly an old Scottish air, but is entirely new to me. The only words which were remembered by the young woman, a Miss Pringle, who sang it, were these. I write them down that I may know if you have heard them." So he's basically saying, "I've got this verse, I've got this tune. Would you possibly know anything about this? Have you heard a version of this?" He's trying to trace it down. He's trying to work out if there's a bigger song here. And there is.
Yeah.
And I suspect Sharp probably sent him the copy from the Elizabeth Cochrane manuscript in response to Scott saying, you know, what is there? Where is this song?
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's such an intriguing fragment. So the 100-year-older, the Elizabeth Cochrane manuscript, which Sharp had copied from, starts off, "Into a sweet May morning, as the sun clearly shone, I heard a proper damsel making a heavy moan. Making a heavy moan, I marvelled what she did mean, and it was for a gentleman, Sir John of Hasselgreen." Now, it could be Hazelgreen, it's maybe just a variant spelling, but yes, it's H-A-S. Yeah. But you can hear that repetition, making a heavy moan, making a heavy moan, the verse turning on the same kind of rhythms.
Yeah.
Because, and interestingly, the second verse...
I was just going to say, it's that sort of repetition of the fourth line, the fourth and the fifth line, which in Scott's version, "And ye shall be his bride, lady," and then it repeats, "And ye shall be his bride, lady."
Yeah.
And here, yeah, making a heavy moan, making a heavy moan, yeah.
Yeah, and the nice thing about the earlier song, the earlier manuscript, is that in the second verse, "What aileth thee now, bonny maid, to mourn so sore into the tide? Oh, happy were the man, he says, that had thee to his bride, to lie down by his side when he were not to mean. But still she let the tears down fall for pleasant Hazelgreen." So you can see it's the same song, clearly.
Yeah.
And then so Scott's version kind of starts about that point. It's the man has come upon this girl weeping and is asking her what it is. So that's where the fragment that Scott gets clearly is related to that. It's from sort of third or fourth stanza of that. It's picking up at that point anyway.
But this is where the storylines then split.
Yeah.
Because as you mentioned earlier, whereas Scott's one is the male saying, "Ah, don't worry about this other chap that you're in love with. My son is great. He'll make a worthy bridegroom."
Yeah, that's
whereas this other one, this fuller, older one, is quite a different story.
Yeah. And it's one of several versions in which there's this several sort of long versions of John of Hazelgreen. It's Child Ballad 293.
Yeah. The Child Ballad.
He records a few different versions of it.
So the Child Ballad's just for for people who don't know, because whenever you're talking about folk songs or looking into folk songs, you see everywhere mentioned Child number such and such. Francis Child just collected an enormous number of folk songs and ballads from various places and collated them, lots of different versions. So, yeah, when we talk about that, yeah, John of Hazel Green, Jockey Hazeldean, is Child Ballad 293.
Yeah. Yeah, which as you say, there's multiple versions within that, but they all sort of follow a similar pattern, which is not the pattern that Scott's first version follows, which is further grist to the mill that Scott had a verse and then worked up the rest of it from that.
Yeah,
I don't think he'd seen the original thing, the original full version before he actually worked his version.
Well, I think, yeah, because Scott, I mean, he said himself in 1825, sort of reflecting on a lot of the ballads that he collected, he kind of regretted the fact that he had, worked them up. I think he said something like, you know, he tidied them up to improve their poetry, but in doing so, he'd kind of lost a bit of their spirit. So my sense is that if Scott had known that this older ballad with that storyline had existed, he would have stuck at least to that storyline rather than doing something different.
Yeah, for instance, when he collects Thomas the Rhymer, it's in three parts in his minstrelsy, I think. The first part was what he collected. The second part he had a bit of and he worked up. The third part he just made up.
Yeah, yeah.
To give it some kind of closure of the narrative that he wanted. But this longer version is kind of fascinating in its own way, because eventually the man kind of persuades, cajoles the girl to actually coming with him to marry his son. Now, in the really old version, the one that we think is the Elizabeth Cochrane manuscript, they actually go away to Bigger, which is nice for Bigger to get a mention.
Yeah, yeah. Paris is big, but Bigger's bigger.
Indeed. In some other versions, it's Edinburgh, which is a bit more pedestrian. I like the Bigger one better. And basically, he buys her and decks her out in all the kit, and then takes her to marry his son. It's not recorded as why she suddenly decided to agree to this. I think in some versions, actually, he says Jockey Hazeldean's dead.
Right.
Or rather, John of Hazel Green is already dead. And she says, oh, no, this is an absolute nightmare. This is news to me. But perhaps the shock of this is one of the reasons he manages to actually get her to come with him.
Yeah.
But of course, the nice thing is that when they arrive at the house, his son comes out to meet his father. And of course, his son is said John of Hazel Green.
Yeah.
And so everyone enjoys this. They get married and it's all magic. And he actually says, the son says in some versions, you know, I would die for this girl. I would give up everything for this girl. And his son says, now, hold your horses. Actually, you don't need to. It's okay. As far as I'm concerned, the estates are yours, my boy. Marry her with my blessing.
It is funny looking at these ballads. I mean, some of the story lines are so utterly ridiculous. it's like going to see Mozart operas, and you're sitting there going, "Well, this is the most ridiculous plot line I have ever heard of."
I was actually very disappointed once. I think it was The Marriage of Figaro I was watching, and it was just people hiding in wardrobes and stuff like that. Of course, people loved Scott's work for operas.
Yeah, Lady of the Lake, of course.
Yeah. And of course, there's The Bride of Lammermoor.
It's I'm kind of fascinated. The more you look into it, those links between Scotland and, in some cases, Scottish music and some of the great European composers. We talked before about, you know, Beethoven and Haydn setting a lot of Scottish tunes. And yeah, it's fascinating.
It's that whole thing about the vogue for Scottish tunes.
A band of gold you shall not want, nor braid to bind your hair, nor metal town, nor managed oak, nor palfrey fresh and fair. Ye the foremost o'er them all shall be your forest queen.
But so I guess, in essence, if we're going to try and sum this whole thing up, what you have is John of Hazel Green, or Sir John of Hazel Green, depending on how old you want to go, that's about 100 years old when Scott gets hold of it or sees a copy of it subsequently. The piece that Scott had is slightly different from any of those, but had obviously come from the same song, and it's a single verse. And he gets it, he says, collected from a Miss Pringle. Now, presumably, it was collected by Alexander Campbell from the singing of Miss Pringle in Jedburgh, we think. And Campbell sends the verse to Scott. Scott's intrigued by it, sends out feelers to see if he can find anything else about it, doesn't seem to get much change, so works up three other verses of it, and then sends it back to Campbell so that he can then publish it as part of Alban's anthology. And you have one of the kind of staples of Scottish folk music right there. There are some versions of this collected in the Appalachians in the early 20th century, which some people have said is kind of proof that there's an oral tradition that supported the earlier ones. You know, the idea that there's an earlier version that Scott might have been working from, which is kind of true and kind of not, because, of course, there's nothing to have prevented someone from having a copy of Alban's anthology in the Appalachians and then the oral tradition to have taken over. And I think it does lead to the idea that actually the interaction between written and oral traditions, I don't think, is necessarily all one way. It's not oral tradition up until the point that someone writes it and then that's it forever and ever. That might be the case if everyone's got copies of the books, but of course they don't, because books are expensive. Yeah. So, see, some people get copies of the book, and then the oral tradition takes over again, and you get different versions again. So I think when you're talking about Scott, you have to kind of be aware of that interaction. And I think it's actually one of the most interesting things about Scott, and the way that he places within Scottish folk music.
They sought her bath by bower and hall, the lady was nae seen. She's over the border and over.
Well, thank you for listening to this episode of the Scottish Song Guide. There are a good few others up there now for you to check out on your favourite podcast app. And please leave us a review if you have enjoyed them, or spread the word. If you want to hear our full versions of any of the songs we've talked about in the podcasts, you can find your way to them via our website. A lot of them are on the streaming services, or we have some of them on CD. So you can go to thesorries.co.uk. And we also have some further reading material and some of our sources on our Scottish Song Guide website, scottishsongguide.com. But that's us for today. So we shall speak to you next week, and we'll see you later.
See you soon.
I held the border and a wall. We joke, oh, Hazeldene.